Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.
Trouble! That's what we're going to get into today.
I can't do it no more.
Yes! Hello, everyone! You are listening to the number one talk radio station in Philadelphia, covering most of the Mid-Atlantic states. So we're talking about Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Maryland, Delaware. I had someone in here yesterday. I was filling in for my double good girlfriend, Dawn Stenslin, yesterday. And I had someone from Michigan calling in, saying that he listens to my show right now. So I think your name is Paul. Feel free to call in, Paul. And feel free for everyone else to call in as well. The listener number is 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. Just call and say hello. How y'all doing? I would love to. Hey, I'm looking over here at YouTube. I see Kimmy is on. Hey, Kimmy. What's up, Susie loves? I love it. So good to see all of you guys. And so we have a jam-packed show today. I'm going to go ahead and get my first guest. Is he ready? Sean Tima. Hey, Sean, how you doing?
Grateful to be here, Kathy. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I just love it. I love the enthusiasm in that young voice. I just love it. Sean is coming from a really wonderful organization. I flew out, I think it was last year or the summer of last year, to you guys' headquarters, Sean, at Young Americans for Liberty. Let me tell you guys, I met Jacob, Peyton, Dylan, and so many others, just really wonderful people. It is so encouraging when you are not in the category of young people, and you know how we are in our, you know, Gen X boomers. We always look down on the young people saying, what are they doing? And then I walked into you guys' doors and I went into your trophy room and I see all the work you're doing. Like, you guys, like, a lot of people don't talk about you. You don't hear your name on everyone's lips. But my goodness, you guys are really doing the hard work of getting good representatives elected into public office, whether state or even at the congressional level. It's been very encouraging getting to know more and more about Young Americans for Liberty. This is Sean Tima on. He is the chief operating officer. So tell me, what are you guys up to right now?
Yo, Kathy, thanks again for having me. And to anyone listening, you're only as old as you feel. We can all be young at heart. Fight for Liberty. We're up to a lot of things. We've got students across the country who are taking the ultimate civics lesson and fighting back on their college campuses to free their fellow students from anti-liberty policies like pepper spray bans, like promoting campus carry, like fighting against the free speech bans that are on campus. You know, these college campuses are just mini governments in and of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So students on how to change policy at the campus level, but also that they can really affect change at the local level, right? Getting out, knocking on doors for state rep and state senate elections, students can be the difference maker whether a good liberty candidate wins or a socialist authoritarian is in office based on how many doors they knock. So we're a student group. We're also a political machine. We've got four big regional events that we're having this spring, bringing the best and brightest liberty kids to a training for a weekend. We call them YowCon. So there's a lot of great things.
I love it. And tell me about that room, the room that I walked into, kind of like your trophy room. I think you guys are going to have to find another space because almost every inch of that room, the wall was filled.
Absolutely. So that is our Operation Win at the Door victory wall that you're referring to.
Yes.
And photos of every state legislator that YAL recruited students have helped elect into their position of power. And we've helped elect over 400 candidates who have filled out a survey, said, hey, I will commit to radically reducing the size and scope of government, and are in there doing great things at the state level. People like Jeff Shipley in Iowa, people like Danny McCormick in Louisiana, people like Shelley Luther, the salon owner who was thrown in jail for opening her business during COVID. She's out in the Texas House of Representatives right now.
Look at that.
Right? But that victory wall, we also put red X's on some of those names, as you might remember. We hold up the students accountable. So if you're going to vote for the tax increase, if you're going to vote against the Second Amendment, if you're going to vote against civil liberties, you know, promoting these failed policies like civil asset forfeiture, we're going to give you a warning. And if you do it again, we're going to kick you out. So we're not here to have a social club. We're here to make real change at the state legislature.
I love it. Let me tell you guys, if there is an organization you are looking to support, one that is actually doing the work and not just doing big conferences, getting big names and getting big donor dollars so that they can pay themselves more money. This, if you're looking for the opposite of that, then truly go out and take a look at Young American Liberty, because I'm just loving everything about them. Each time I talk to them, I just can't help but to smile. It's just, I mean, ran and operated by a bunch of young people. And I have to correct you on one thing, Sean. Sean said you're only as old as you feel, as you think. No, Sean.
Well, maybe I'm too much of an optimist. Sue me.
I used to say that also until I got a little bit older. It's like, no, you actually feel it. But anyway, being very serious for a moment, you know, we had another school shooting down in Florida, Florida State University. I'm sure my listeners have heard of that. Everyone's talking about it. Another 20-year-old student. Son of a local sheriff deputy ended up killing two people, injuring six people, and 20 years old. What is going on? I mean, at 20 years old, I mean, that's the beginning of life. You're free, you're out, you're on college, you're learning about things, but something has really gone wrong with our young people, and it's real. The anxiety, the stress. I'm looking at 20, 21 year olds with anxiety puppies. I'm like, what? Really? This is what, I mean, life is tough, but not at 20. What is going on? What are you seeing at in your generation and on these college campuses? What are you seeing?
Yeah, well, I think Jonathan Haidt puts it best in his new book. He talks about this as the anxious generation. Mm. And many variables go into this, right? Putting students in these positions of horrible mental health. I mean, you've got economic anxiety. You've got digital social media like you've never seen before. You've got psychotropic drugs that may play an impact in this. There are many reasons why things are going wrong. But I think what we need to do and prioritize is defending our students, or rather, giving them the right to defend themselves, right?
That?
These gun-free zones are only making students less safe, right? We need to have full, you know, non-lethal weapons allowed on college campuses. And dare I say, even campus carry allowed on college campuses, because the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. We saw this in Indiana a couple years ago, the mall shooting that wasn't, because a young man had constitutional carry and stopped the shooter. We see this in churches in Texas a couple years ago, the same thing. And to leave our students defenseless on these campuses, thinking that saying this is a gun-free zone and that, you know, campus security will keep you safe is just wishful thinking. It's a falsehood with real consequences.
And I mean, how illogical, right? I mean, like, how illogical that you announce to people who either want to commit suicide, but they don't want to do it alone, they want to take others with them, or you're dealing with people who just want to create havoc. And generally, these people turn out to be the biggest cowards ever. And so they don't go into a gun range shop to do mass murder. They go into places, especially those that have big, beautiful signs posted everywhere, say, virtue signaling. Look at us. We have no ability to protect ourselves. And it's generally those particular places where these cowards or people who are suffering from real mental break from reality, and instead of committing suicide by themselves, they want to take some others with them, go in and take advantage and harm good people.
Absolutely. And you hit the nail on the head, Kathy. These people are cowards, right? Rather than go and fix their own problems, work on their own life, they try and end the lives of others, try and become a martyr. You know, there's the old saying that there will never be a land invasion of America because there will be a gun behind every bush, right? There'll be a gun in every home waiting for the invader.
Right.
We need to apply that same principle to these vulnerable places like schools, like college campuses, right? Let teachers carry. Let students carry. Give people the right to defend themselves, and that will deter you know, these crazies from coming in and trying to start something. And the fact that we're not there yet as a country is very disconcerting.
Yeah, but let me read some of the wins from your organization. Jonathan Davis, who led the fight on the University of Tennessee, one of the highest sexual assault rates in the country, apparently, University of Tennessee. But Jonah Davis fought to overturn the ban that was on campus for the use of pepper spray, which evolved into Tennessee's successful passing of the Lake and Riley Act, permitting non-lethal defense like pepper spray on all college campuses in Tennessee. Your organization was a part of that.
Yes, very proud of Jonah and the whole UT chapter. You know, this is the ultimate civics lesson, is students, you know, taking those same tactics from Saul Alinsky, Rules for Radicals, grassroots pressure, but applying it toward freeing the student body, toward getting government out of the way so we can have real solutions. So Jonah went out there with his team. They did petition gatherings, said, hey, we should have the right to defend ourselves on campus.
How about that?
A ton of students agreed, and they signed up, right? Once they hear this positive message of liberty, they're in. They delivered that petition to the administration. They put the pressure on the school, but they didn't just wait to rely on the school. They worked and they did grassroots lobbying with Tennessee legislators to say, hey, let's pass this statewide, right? And the Lake and Riley Act passed in 2024 in Tennessee, saying that all students in public universities in Tennessee have the right to non-lethal weapons to defend themselves, which is total common sense, right? You've got to let women and men, if they want, carry pepper spray on a college campus to
defend. At a minimum. Like, why do you want us to be like sheep to the slaughter? People, I mean, crime is high. The crime rate, especially over the past 4 years, has just exploded. What is the logic of administrators who would say you're not allowed to protect yourself? You just got to walk out here into society and hope for the best. What is the logic?
Yeah, well, I think they're afraid. I think administrators, college administrators, like politicians, are scared of demonstrable proof of angry voters or angry customers. And the status quo for these administrators is to think, oh, well, if we allow for pepper spray, we allow for tasers, we allow for guns on campus, then we might get some liberal students, some liberal parents beating down our door and saying that you're putting us in danger. Now, these people are misinformed, and some of them, I think, have empathetic instincts, but they're wrong. But they know those people to be the threat to their job security and their peace. Mm. It's our job as liberty activists to say, hey, there are plenty of people who want their freedom, demand their freedom now. Those are demonstrable proof of angry voters, angry customers, and we're going to be louder than the left and demand our freedom, because that actually leads to helping people.
So, and that's what we have to do. I honestly believe that being on the campaign trail in my own race, being on the campaign trail with a very viable presidential candidate, Vivek Ramaswamy, at the time, and traveling the nation, that is what I see. That is what we need to do. We need to get loud. Now, we're not the left, so we're not going to start throwing Molotov cocktails into liberal or, you know, bastions, but instead we have to organize, we have to get around, get behind really good people, and we have to get loud. You know, sticking your head down and just biding your time, that doesn't work in a society that has decided we're going to make ourselves ungovernable. We're going to denigrate institutions that we should be honoring. And we're literally living in a time where we have legislators even and NGOs and people with the very large wallets who are funding those within the community to become ungovernable. And we cannot just stick our head in the sand and wish upon a star that someone else is going to float down and save us from all of the mayhem.
I couldn't agree more. No one is coming to save us, right? No one in DC. Only we can save ourselves. And we do that by telling these politicians or on the campuses, the administrators, hey, I'm coming for your vote or I'm coming for your seat, right?
That's all they care about.
Exactly. And big fan of Vivek, you know, big fan.
Yes, I know. Vivek is awesome. I mean, but you're right. These people are not. Okay. And speaking of that, I know we're getting ready to go on a break. But Harvard University, I think this is Donald Trump has his finger on the pulse. Talk about what these children are being taught that is radicalizing our children, that is causing them to have anxiety, that you look like a boy. Your DNA says you're a boy, but you may not be a boy. And now you got to figure out all of that. Solving world problems is churning out a generation of degenerate on one hand, but also kids with a lot of anxiety. I have like 30 seconds. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, colleges have been teaching critical thinking, or critical theory, not critical thinking, for way too long. It's coming home to roost. You know, Trump is saying, Harvard, you got to dismantle DEI. We're going to hold your federal funding. I say, this may sound radical. Let's go a whole step further. We cut all the federal funding from these universities.
How about
that? Cut the federal student loan program. We save $70 billion a year. These colleges will actually have to figure out how to produce value now. So let's do it across the board.
Well, I mean, that's a harsh one. But
I'm a harsh guy.
But what do you do? What do you do? These people are at war. It's a different form of war. It's not the kind of conventional war that we're used to, right? With bullets and guns and invading countries. It is within our. It's within. It's not without. It's within. And it's our own people. What do you do?
Yeah. Well, I would say you got to just keep leading with a positive message of liberty, right? Righteous indignation and anger can take us to a certain place. It can stir up a small irate minority, but we've got to cast forward solutions and say, hey, make the case for the meritocracy. Make the case for reducing the size and scope of government. We will have a better country.
I love it. Thank you so much. We're getting ready to go on break, but you guys have been listening to Sean Tima. He is the chief operating officer at Young Americans for Liberty. Literally, pull out your phone, go type in Young Americans for Liberty, bookmark it, and find out, because I'm telling you guys, I met Jeff Shipley in Iowa when I was out there with Vivek, a wonderful young man who did what no one in the GOP was willing to do, and that was to fight for a seat that Republicans had just assumed would always be in Democrat territory. So
thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT on demand.
Let me give a shout out to my YouTube crew out here. You guys show up every weekend. I love it. From Tony. Great stuff, Kathy. Good morning, crew. I love it. I know. I got Mango Mush again. What's up? What's up, Mango Mush? Kimmy saying she agree. More Kathy Barnett. I appreciate you guys so much. It really is an encouraging 30 years since Oklahoma bombing. When did I get so old? I know. I just saw that also. Susie Love on Fox News talking about that. I know. Like, when did that happen? When did that happen? I have no idea. But yes, we get old. I know. But the alternative, what's the alternative of getting old? I remember when is my guest on? Nope. Okay. So I'm waiting for, I have a guest who's going to be calling in pretty soon. But I remember when I turned 25 years old, I turned 26 years old. And it was like so sad and disappointing. And I called my aunt called me to say happy birthday, Kathy. And I'm crying. I'm like in an all out, full blown meltdown. And she's like, what's wrong? I was like, I'm old. She said, what are you talking about? I was like, at that time, MTV was the big thing, right? And every show to get on MTV, to be a part of their crew, to run for Miss America, anything, every competition, it was 25 and younger. So because I had just turned 26, I'm like, I'm old. Now I'm, years old, and I'm just like, oh my gosh. But I remember my aunt saying to me, she said, first of all, you're ridiculous. But second of all, what's the alternative? Death. And when I thought about it, spoken like only an auntie would, I was like, oh, okay. Never cried again. Appreciated every year because what's the alternative? And so, but I can say getting old kind of sucks. but nonetheless, it is all good. Okay, I got my guest on right now. I am coming to Mr. Joe Penland. Hey, Mr. Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. You guys are familiar with Joe. I have him on at least once a month because, again, I need wisdom. I think we all need wisdom. And for those who may not recall who Mr. Joe Penland is, he's a businessman turned political activist. He sponsored the Tucker Carlson Live tour that came here to Pennsylvania that really injected hope into my life. Because I was feeling mighty bad right around that time, looking at what the typical Republican strategists were doing here in Pennsylvania. And then Joe brings Tucker Carlson live here. And now you're in a room filled with people who are actually saying the name of Jesus without cowering, praying, saying America is great again. It just really, we can't be alone. We need to be around like-minded people, especially when you're in the midst of a battle. And so I will never forget that, Joe. I will never let you live that down. I will always speak praises because that really did switch, flip a switch in me. And I will always appreciate that. But Joe, you and I were actually having a pretty intense conversation via phone not too long ago about Trump tariffs. We are both in agreement that we can no longer kick the can down the road. The way we've been selling our country off to the highest bidder, we have run the course on that. And there was going to be a disruption one way or the other. Either our country was just going to go to the way of Rome and every other great nation that has come before it, or there was going to be a disruptor who was going to come in, shake things up, and begin the hard work of turning our ship right. And that disruptor goes by the name of President Donald Trump. And we're very appreciative of what he has done. And yet there is a concern because he's done the first leg of this race of putting out these tariffs, getting China to make the phone call and to enter into a round of discussions. So that is great. But now comes the second leg, and this is something you've been very consistent about for some time. I'm going to just pitch it over to you, Joe. What is the next leg that we should be thinking about?
Well, you have to applaud President Trump for taking this initiative on and getting America to be first. That's what we need to be. We need to stay first. We got to bring these jobs back. Got to bring manufacturing back. And, you've been hearing that for many years. And finally, you have a president that has the backbone to make that happen. And so that's great. The other side of the sword is we have to have people to do the work. And right now, we have almost record employment right now. We have very few people out of work. We have very few people looking for work. And that's a problem right now. We have about 8 million jobs in this country that we can't fill. So if we bring the 10 or 15 or 20 million jobs back to this country before we get our workforce up, then we're not going to really capitalize on the $7 trillion. It's going to take years to build these plants and this manufacturing and so forth that he's going to bring back. I would like to see some balancing act that we, one, continue to get the bad apples out of this country, get everybody bad out of this country, and then come up with a program that we can bring some workers into the country so we can capitalize on the $7 trillion. Kathy, I don't want to see $6 trillion of this spent in other countries manufacturing the conveyors and the robots and the machinery to put these plants together.
Wow.
And all we do is $1 trillion here. We need to balance that where we can capitalize on more of it.
No
one
is
talking
about
that. We need to string it out over many years.
You know what? No one is talking about that. But when you just said it like that, It painted a picture. Now, Joe keeps talking about this $7 trillion. What is he talking about? I mean, I heard it first from the Commerce Secretary Lutnick, who said for every $1 trillion of reinvestment back into our country. So if we can get other, if we can get businesses like NVIDIA and others to, instead of building a plant over in China or India, but get them to build that plant here in America, for every $1 trillion that we get reinvested into our country, that increases the GDP by 1%. Well, a 1% GDP increase, I'm putting it in round numbers, is roughly $300 to $400 billion. So Donald Trump is talking about $7 trillion. So $7 trillion coming back to this country times the 300 billion, that's like $2.1 trillion of GDP. GDP means what? Your household. So if the GDP rises by $2 trillion, that's money flowing into all of our household. Now, what Joe is proposing is that we walk and chew gum at the same time. We want the $2 trillion of GDP that will come and float all of our boats, big boats, little boats, all of our boats will rise on that tide. But what happens if $7 trillion come to this country, but only one, but we don't have people to actually do the work, to do the building of the facilities, or to do the building of the manufacturing. Am I right, Joe?
That is correct. That is correct. You have to be able to take advantage of this. And there's two ways to do it. One, obviously, we need to increase our workforce in this country. We've done that several times over the last 200, almost 50 years. You know, we went to war. We had to bring people in this country to shore up our workforce for a period of time. That policy went from 1942 to 1964. It's not something you have to put in permanently, but we need to take advantage of this $7 trillion and not have $6 trillion of it fabricated in the same countries that they were bringing the money in. So in essence, what will happen, $1 trillion gets spent here, $6 trillion gets spent abroad, and I don't think that's what America really wants. We want the long haul. What we need them to do is commit to put money here that we can build these projects over several years, maybe 10, 15, 20 years. So that money is captured here. I'd like to see us start out with manufacturing facilities that could produce the steel and the conveyors that these plants are going to need. Do that first.
I agree, guys. And we know, if you've been around politicians long enough, you know, ain't nobody talking about this. Ain't nobody even probably really thinking about this. But it takes a businessman to plant the seeds. And Joe, that is what you are. I appreciate you. Guys, go find out more about Joe by going to joefromtexas.com. joefromtexas.com. Find out who he is, read about him, sign his pledge out there, and know what, find out who the good people are so that we can get behind them. Joe, thank you so much for joining me.
Have a great holiday.
Yes. Okay, guys.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.
And right now, I wanted to bring in a new friend that I have had the opportunity to meet, Rabbi Mark Fishman. He is actually calling in from Israel right now. And you are the campaign manager for Israel 365 Action. That's a very new organization on the lips of most Americans here. So let's just start off real quickly. What is Israel 365 Action and what are you guys doing?
Well, first of all, Kathy, thank you so much for having me on the show today. It's a pleasure to be joining you, and it's a real honor. Israel 365 Action is a new party that was created by the organization Israel 365. Israel 365 is a conservative pro-Zionist think tank that promotes Israel and supports the Jewish people in our biblical homeland. This organization, which it created, is a political party running in the World Zionist Congress.
Now, what is the World Zionist Congress? Because that, too, is not a word that we hear often here in America.
Well, you will be surprised to hear that even the Jewish people are not so familiar with the World Zionist Congress. This was a organization set up in 1897 by Theodor Herzl. This was the person that people call the modern father of Zionism. And he created this organization to launch the State of Israel. In many ways, it should have collapsed and been incorporated into the modern state in 1948, when Ben-Gurion declared statehood. But it continued, it survived. And today, almost 125 years later, the organization is still up and running. It's an umbrella organization for some of the major statewide institutions in Israel. It controls a large budget, and it's seen...
Yeah, it's about $1 billion, right?
Every year, $1 billion of funding is pumped into all of these different organizations that it is the umbrella organization for. And what takes place is a vote from Jewish people all over the world. Mm. And they make up, we call it the Jewish People's Parliament. They make up delegates, and they then put forward motions which are voted upon, and that decides the flavor and the direction that the State of Israel moves in.
Yeah, and most Americans here, we understand campaign financing, and we understand that $1 billion is a lot of money, and you can really push your agenda and get your people elected to the Knesset and other places where people then turn around and make decisions. And explain a little bit about the makeup of the World Zionist Congress. So again, it's this organization. It's not an actual legislative body,
that's
right?
Correct.
Right. But
that's correct.
But they are an organization that has a very large budget of about $1 billion, and they are very influential. And the makeup of this organization tends to lean very left. Right?
That is correct. So as you noted right at the beginning, it does not have legislative powers. So it is not the Knesset, Israel's democratic parliament. It cannot decide law. However, what it can decide is cultural issues, issues surrounding Zionism, and issues surrounding the flavor that the Jewish people want to express their Jewish character. So that is the first aspect of what this body is. And for decades now, it has been in the hands of the left. And over a period of time, as the left has become deeper and deeper entrenched into more and more liberal values, we've seen that the expression of these very liberal, left-wing, woke even values have also started to seep into the World Zionist Congress in terms of some of their motions, some of their positions, and some of the approaches that they are taking with the country.
Right. And here in America, again, I'm doing this just to pose positioning, this contrast and comparison, because putting it into our in our language, Donald Trump had a massive sweep in last year's election as a direct result of the wokeism, the leftist, the very liberal ideology that has become so pervasive in our country. And it's one thing for that to be here in America. We voted against it. We don't like it. But I would think that's very dangerous to have those kind of people over a very large and influential budget that is getting people elected and pushing their values when you're the only democratic country surrounded by people on their charter is to annihilate you. So I would think that's, I mean, it's kind of like a child playing with matches to have that kind of ideology so pervasive there in Israel. So on May 4th, there is a very big election. This is for Jews all across the world. If I was a Jew, I would so be aware of this. But it is interesting. Most Jews don't understand. But every single Jew listening to this, coming in where this is going, there's a very large Jewish population who is listening. You have a very critical vote come May 4th. What are your instructions to them?
Excellent. So you are correct. The Jewish population of America is invited to enter into this vote. And as a result of the pendulum swinging so far towards the left, there have been a proliferation of many new parties that have been popping up in this election. There are 22 different parties. Amazingly, there was only 13 5 years ago in the last vote. The parties have nearly doubled. Now, you might think, well, I've got a very large choice. How am I supposed to choose? Actually, the choice is very easy. Of the parties who are conservative, leaning right, Israel 365 Action is the party of action. We didn't just choose that name randomly. It's actually who we are. And I want to take one simple example, and you alluded to it in your question, the example of security.
Right.
In the left-wing, liberal-leaning communities, what is referred to as the West Bank, of course, we who live here, I'm actually speaking to you from Judea. I'm a resident of Judea and Samaria. We who live in Judea and Samaria, part of the 500,000 Jewish people that now make up these communities, we would never give this away. And we certainly would never allow a Palestinian state to be founded here. Mark Rubio, if I can quote one of your American leaders of the administration, he put it best. Around 5 weeks ago, Mark Rubio was quoted as saying, "A Palestinian state, we tried that already. It was called Gaza. And look what a mess they made of that."
Right.
And so people are still deluding themselves that a Palestinian state could be created here in Judea and Samaria.
A two-state solution is what we call it here in America.
A two-state delusion is more like it. We will never give away Judea and Samaria. It would be a perilous, dangerous mistake.
But that sounds so mean, Rabbi. What do you mean? Why not?
And here is why it's actually so caring. Because if there would be sovereignty over Judea and Samaria, do you know who would benefit? Obviously, the Jewish communities who live here. But do you know who would be the number two people that would benefit from Jewish sovereignty over Judea and Samaria? The Arabs. Who are living here. Because today, 2025, if you take a look at the nearly 10 million civilian population of the state of Israel, 20% are Arabs. They are Christian Arabs. They are Muslim Arabs. 20% are Arabs. And if you would ask any of them, would you like to live in Lebanon today? Would you like to live in Syria? How about Iraq? How about the list goes on and you will always have the same answer. We know where we are safer, more protected, and have better rights than anywhere else in the Middle East. And those are the Arabs living in Israel. Sovereignty would benefit them.
And even the Palestinian authorities would probably agree with you, because they have not had an election in almost 20 years, because they know, if given the opportunity, unfortunately, the people have already said and have made it very clear they will vote for Hamas. At the time, Ishmael, he has since been, he's no longer here.
Eliminated.
Yes, in the land of the living. But nonetheless, even the Palestinian authorities would agree with you that if the Palestinian people were given their own state and allowed to vote, they will vote in Hamas leadership. And we see how that has worked out in Gaza right now. So I understand that. In the last few moments, if you don't mind, I was looking at one of the flyers I picked up about Israel 365 Action. And at the very beginning, you have three bullet points that makes up your vision. One is, as we've already discussed, ushering in this new courageous leadership. No more wokeism. Number two, strengthening Judea and Samaria. It's West Bank of what? Jordan? No,
exactly.
It's not the West Bank. It is, again, a delusion. It is actually Judea and Samaria. But the third one kind of piqued my interest because, of course, I'm a Christian. And you said in this flyer, it says building strong alliances, faith-based Christians are Israel's greatest allies, and we must invest in these relationships to ensure the next generation of American Christians remain steadfastly committed to Israel's cause. And that piqued my interest, one, because I believe there's a tremendous amount of truth. I am a mm-hmm. Christian. I have a supernatural affinity towards mm-hmm. those things related to Israel specifically. Right. Okay. But also, but what I've noticed, especially since 2019, is this radicalization of Christians here in America. I don't even need to mention any of the names of very mm-hmm. popular people, but I'm seeing it from top down, bottom up, is this kind of what I am calling a radicalization of Christians. I'm going to punt that over to you.
Thank you. So you're bringing up 2 points. I'll address your first point first. We believe that the greatest allies to the Jewish people today in America are the Christian community and faith-based allies. This is a very overlooked point, and it's as overlooked as it is important. I want to give you an anecdote. The first member of state that visited President Trump after he was elected into office yes. was, of course, Prime Minister Netanyahu. This in itself speaks volumes for the close and unbreakable bond Israel has with America. There was one group of people, only one, that Prime Minister Netanyahu met with before his meeting with President Trump. Who was that? If you think about it, you'll go through the list of all of the different Jewish organizations, all of the various community leadership, and they will all be the wrong answer. There was one group that he met with, and that was the Evangelical Christian Community of America.
Yes.
15 different Christian leaders coming from the evangelical community were the people that Netanyahu met with prior to his meeting with President Trump. And this is a sea change in terms of who the true, not true, let me correct that, who the strongest and newest wave of support for Israel is today in 2025. It's Christian faith-based partners. And that's a very powerful statement. Of course, that doesn't mean that we don't have partners and supporters within the Jewish community. And we absolutely do. And we know that. But I think it's very telling that that's who the prime minister met with before his meeting with President
yes.
Trump.
And what about, and in our last couple of minutes, what about the radicalization that, I mean, it's very real. It's very palpable. You yes. cannot help but to see it.
So we are very familiar with the woke left and the anti-Semitism that's been coming out from there. And social commentators, Karis Ray, for example, among others, have been documenting and starting to notice how there's now what we're calling a woke right. Mm. And what that means is that people from within both the Christian radical community, the radical extreme right community, are starting to have these same tropes of anti-Semitism and sometimes quite vulgar and rabid anti-Semitism, as they are trying to put the woes of America onto the scapegoating of the community that we always know is the community that scapegoated the Jewish community. And this is a real danger. It's a real worry, and it's something that has to be named, something that has to be looked out for, and as a result, carefully guarded against.
Well, I am very appreciative that it was here in writing in black and white that you recognize the importance of the relationship, but also recognize that this is not by osmosis. There is an investment that has to be made. And so again, May 4th is the last day. So voting is open right now to determine Correct. The leadership for the World Zionist Congress. So between now and May 4th, every Jew in America, and even if they don't, if you're a Jew and you're hearing this, pick up the phone, text, call, email your friends and family who are also Jewish and encourage them to go to, what is the website?
Very simply, Israel365Action. Those are the numbers, 365. Israel365Action.com. And there you'll be taken straight away to the voting form. All you have to do is put in your information and follow the instructions. Spend 5 minutes for Israel. If you care about the future of the Jewish people in Israel, and you care about the vision of a strong, safe, and sovereign Judea and Samaria, go to Israel365Action.com. and vote. Slate number 7.
Rabbi Mark Fishman, campaign manager for Israel 365 Action. Thank you so much, sir, for joining me.
Kathy, this was an absolute pleasure, and thank you so much for everything.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.
All right, everybody. That's it for me. You've been listening to The Kathy Barnett Show. Thank you so very much for tuning in, and I will see y'all next week. Blessings. Happy Resurrection Day.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.